Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchian. My co-hosts today are Scott Fish and Matt Harrison. Hello, gentlemen.
What's going on, Charge?
Greetings.
We are nearing the playoffs, and that means that every game means that much more.
Yes. Except for the people who are way out of playoff contention. They're not listening.
No, they're out. Right. They're not listening anyway, so we're not even talking to them.
So just to you guys who are listening, our stuff means a lot.
That's right. You know, if you're a three-win operation at this stage, you're not listening to this podcast.
Maybe they love our banter.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, maybe. They should. And, you know, really, that's one of the beauties of the Guillotine League. When you get chopped, you don't have to pretend you care.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got a three-win team right now in December. You don't care, but you have to go through the charade that you care.
Yeah.
I should really make, like, a waiver wire move because I've moved two guys on IR.
Yeah.
I should try to put in a starting lineup.
Hey, I was in two this year. One I'm still in.
Yes.
And the other one, cut in week one.
Wow. Like, bookended it.
The truth is, you cannot lose in a Guillotine League. I've talked about this for two, 3 years
Are
now.
Are you kidding?
You cannot lose. You either win. Or you either win the Guillotine League or you win extra free time.
That's right. It's a bonus win-win. You can't lose. I love it. Over the course of the show, we're going to break down all the matchups, fantasy style with letter grades, and all the players that matter. We'll take a chance on nine different players. We'll answer three tough questions. And as we usually do in December, we will retire premature speculation, but we're going to fill that time by giving you some of our favorite Dynasty Empire League stashes instead.
There we go.
So you'll still get some good data out of that in the final segment of the show. We begin with the Cardinals taking on the Bears, Matt, and Kyler Murray expected to be back at the helm for this one.
Yeah, it's still a really weird, gross game, though. Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins, I kind of lump them together. Both have been limited in practice, Murray with the ankle, Hopkins with the hammy. Both are reported as moving around pretty well. Kyler, like you said, looks like he's going to play. Easier for him to overcome an ankle injury than a hamstring for DeAndre Hopkins.
Yes.
So I'll give Kyler a B grade here, as Chicago's pass defense has actually been okay. If for some reason Kyler does not go, we downgrade all of the receivers a full letter grade here.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, if DeAndre Hopkins is active, I'm also going to downgrade all the wide receivers a full letter grade.
Okay.
So, like, if I gave Christian Kirk a B right now and both Hopkins was active and Kyler was not, Christian Kirk would be on the bench. Get
okay.
it? Here's how we do it. Christian Kirk gets a C.
After all that.
The Bears have bad corners, but the bestish has been Xavier Crawford, who operates from the slot. That's where Kirk spends three quarters of his time. AJ Green, I'll throw a C on as well. He'll mostly line up against Artie Burns, who covered for the injured Duke Shelley last week and allowed 55 yards and a score in his coverage.
Yeah, and I think they finally have benched Kendall Vildor.
Yeah,
he's
no longer
idea,
a starter anymore.
Which is too bad, because we love picking on him every show.
I think we just love to say Kendall Vildor.
Oh, yeah. He's an open and shut book, and, you know, we've had every possible, I think, book reference.
Yeah. AJ Green has seen at least five targets in four of his last five games as well. And Rondale Moore, he saw 11 targets in week 11 with Hopkins out, but that was kind of the season outlier on him. I'll throw a C grade on him, seeing as how we can downgrade it to bench if Hopkins plays.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Ertz, I'll give him a C grade as well. In 2017, Zach Ertz played against the Bears and had 103 yards and a score. In 2019, Zach Ertz played against the Bears and had 103 yards and a score. It is an odd number year, so 103 yards and a score here. So the Bears have been they've been okay against the tight end. They're ranking in top 10 in receptions, yards, and touchdowns allowed to the tight end, so they've been pretty good. Finally, Chase Edmonds still on IR with the ankle injury. James Conner should see at least 15 carries in this game, so we can safely put him on a touchdown, too.
Yep.
Since week 5, the Bears have allowed a touchdown to every running back who's had at least 15 carries in a game, except for Jamal Williams in Thanksgiving last week, so Conner gets a B. On the Bears side, it's really gross. Justin Fields just downgraded to doubtful on Friday, meaning that Andy Dalton is going to probably start in this one.
He's your starter.
You should not start him against the Cardinals, who are only allowing 201 yards and one touchdown a game to opposing quarterbacks, and Almost all of his wide receivers are hurt. Allen Robinson hasn't practiced this week with a hamstring
injury. He's not going to go.
Marquise Goodwin didn't practice Wednesday with rib and foot injuries. Cole Kmet didn't go either with a groin injury. Darnell Mooney is the only one you can really play. He gets just a C grade. The Cards are allowing the fifth fewest receptions and yards to opposing wide receivers, though, so it's just a C grade for Mooney. And finally, David Montgomery, he gets the Scott Fish Volume C.
It's pended.
Yep. Kersploosh. The only hope for the Bears is to hold the time of possession. The good news, the Cards are allowing 4.7 yards per carry on the year. The bad news, the Cards have only allowed 4 touchdowns all season to runners, and the game scripts have not favored runners all year, as the Cards are only seeing an average of 17 rushing attempts per game.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the Giants taking on the Dolphins. This is a brutal game.
I feel like every one of my matchups, by the way, I'm like, oh, God, this Start is a brutal game.
Until you get to Giants-Dolphins.
Start the Dolphins defense.
Well, you actually do start the Dolphins defense.
They've been so hot lately.
Giants are going to be without their starting quarterback and two receivers in this game. And there's nobody in the passing game to play here,
nope,
right?
Absolutely none. Okay. Absolutely none.
Let's go talk about Saquon Barkley.
If you are really in a pinch and need to take a dart throw, it might be Tony, because he got 13 targets from Glennon in the last one.
If he goes, he's not expected to play.
Yeah, so and Shepard's not expected to play. He had Miami's terrible against the slot, and he's not going to go. Like, there were options, it just didn't come together for the Giants. Nothing in the passing game. Barkley, I am giving the B grade to, though. They leaned on the run heavily in that other Glennon game, giving over 24 touches to the running backs, and Glennon only passed it 25 times in that first Glennon game. So I'm giving Barkley a B grade here. He has 10 catches in his 2 games back.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this stat the other day. Barkley hasn't topped 60 yards rushing since 2019.
Yeah, that stat was from me, by the way.
Scary.
And yes, his 57 yards is the best Barkley game in 2 seasons.
I created that stat, by the way.
I tweeted it this week, so I thought he has it. It's been since week 4. Since he scored a touchdown, it's been since 2019 since he's tapped 57 rushing.
I think with the volume plus the likelihood of 4 to 5 catches, I got a B grade on him, though.
You're way more optimistic than I am.
I am. I upped it with – I feel better about it with Glennon in than I would have with Daniel Jones. On the Miami side, on the Tua side, I'm giving Tua a C grade. The Giants held down Hurts last week, but he was hurt a little, and they've been more like middle of the road defense against quarterbacks over the last 6. Tua's looked really solid. He's second in the NFL in completion percentage over that span. In those 6 games, he has 12 touchdowns, so 2 per game, averaging about 250 yards per game. If Gaskin would stop taking wildcat snaps at the goal line, maybe Tua would get a few more points. But I got a C grade on him. A grade for Jalen Waddle. It's hard not to give him his due at this point. He's on pace to break Anquan Boldin's rookie record for receptions.
Yeah.
He's averaging about 9 targets, 6 catches, 75 yards per game. With Parker and Fuller unlikely to play as well, he's still going to be just about the only guy in town. So I do have an A grade on Waddle. I just think double-digit targets.
Waddle is entering rookie of the year conversations right now.
Yep.
And Ja'Marr Chase is handing that,
award
away.
Not, 5 games have not been spectacular for Chase. Gesicki, I have a C grade on him. He had a quiet day against Carolina last week in what should have been a decent spot, but Gesicki basically plays jumbo wide receiver role and had 48 plus yards in the 5 previous games to that. Giants just gave up really, really good days to Gronk and Waller. They're mostly average against the position. I'll have a C grade there. In the running game, Philip Lindsay, I actually kind of liked this week. Until now, he's turned up with an injury and he's doubtful to play.
Yeah.
So it's going to be
back to Miles Gaskin.
All Miles Gaskin. And Lindsay had 12 carries last week. If he's not there, Gaskin's just going to get more volume.
What do you think it says about Miles Gaskin that on less than a week with the team, they gave Philip Lindsay 12 touches?
Yeah. the fact that they signed him says something. Mm-hmm. And Lindsay responded with, "Hey, I'm going to have a good game on an even numbered week this time." I'm going to kick that. I have a B grade on Gaskin. The Giants' D checks in at fifth worst against fantasy running backs. They've allowed over 150 total yards per game. That's good for fourth most, seventh most rushing yards, fourth most passing yards allowed to the position. As we know, Gaskin can catch passes.
Yeah.
And those wildcat runs at the goal line, he's getting a lot of goal line opportunity. I have a B grade on him, a much stronger than B grade than I do on Barkley.
Good. I think I'm with you on that.
Yes.
The time has come. Javonte Williams is going to be the starting running back for the Broncos.
Man, I'm glad that you brought this up right after Myles Gaskin, because I got a choice between those two in a league this week.
Charge, what?
What am I going to do, Charge?
What is Twitter going to do? What is the fantasy community going to do if Mike Boone gets 50% of the
And he might. See, that's the thing, is he might. It would be very frustrating. Javonte Williams, Melvin Gordon, not expected to play in this game. He's officially doubtful. And 95% of the people who are doubtful do not play. So Javonte Williams as the starter. He's been really eye-poppingly good to this point, but yeah. Melvin Gordon's been good enough to make sure that Williams isn't getting requisite work to make him a safe start on a week-in and week-out basis until now. Catch is... This has turned into a really good Chiefs run defense.
Ugh.
They're allowing the sixth fewest rushing yards on the third fewest carries, and they haven't given up a touchdown by land, sea, or air in seven games to a running back.
How do they get one by sea?
Yeah, who leads the league in sea touchdowns?
Well, you're going to find out on Monday night with the weather game coming on Monday night. I'm excited to talk to you about that game when we get there later on. So I've got a B grade on Williams in an easier matchup. I would love to give him an A grade. What's going to be fun is think of all of next year's preseason prediction articles that are going to talk about Javonte Williams. They're all going to reference this one game as a starter that he had.
Yep.
You know, in the one game.
And
which
extrapolate
Javonte, and extrapolate that to 16. That's right. In that one
he
game.
He averaged 2,500 yards a year.
Right. So... B grade on Javonte Williams, hoping for greatness, but I'm subduing my expectations a little bit. The entire passing game's on the bench. Teddy Bridgewater has thrown zero or one touchdown in four straight games. The return of Jerry Jeudy, you would think that that would help the passing game, but all it's done is take a meager number of completions and divide them by another
it's
set of
hands.
It's
destroyed Sutton.
It's destroyed everybody, including Tim Patrick, who had been as totally bankable, totally dried up. Sutton's no good. Jeudy's killed us. So Jeudy hasn't scored all year. Granted, he missed a bunch of the season, but still. Patrick's last two games, 14 and 26 yards. Noah Fant has devolved into a spot starter, and this is not the spot. Kansas City's secondary's red hot. Over the past six games, Kansas City's allowing just 223 passing yards and one touchdown per game. So that's it for the passing game. All on the bench. Let's go over to Kansas City. I am excited for what I believe will be a very big game from Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Oh, my gosh.
The Broncos are clearly feeling the absence of Von Miller and A.J. Johnson. Over the past four games, they're allowing the most rushing yards at a league-high 5.6 yards per carry to opposing backs. And it'll get even worse if Shelby Harris misses this game. He's Pro Football Focus's seventh best run-defending interior lineman, and he's questionable to go in this one. And remember, in Clyde Edwards-Helaire's last three full games, he's averaging 100 total yards, and he scored twice in those three games. A grade for Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I just want to mention he's had the flu this week.
He has
we
had the
do
flu.
Not expected. Expect that to be a problem.
Yeah, by Sunday he's expected to be past that.
Just for those listening.
Patrick Mahomes, man, I really struggled with the letter grade on Patrick Mahomes. Let's talk it through together. Dud games in four of the last five games for Mahomes. And when I say dud, I mean dud. Other than that Raiders game with 400 yards and four touchdowns, going back since week six, October 17th was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's had one good game since then. In all the others, Patrick Mahomes is averaging 226 yards and half of one touchdown per game.
Dud.
Are we calling sabotage drop?
God, that's tempting.
I just traded Mahomes for A.J. Brown in a league.
Oh, man.
I'm not even sure how to feel
really?
About it.
Wow. That's amazing. He threw just one touchdown in both of the Denver meetings last year, and that was when Denver's defense was reeling with injury.
Dud.
This defense is better. Denver hasn't surrendered more than two touchdown passes to any quarterback this year. They own the second-best opponent completion percentage, just 58%.
Hmm.
C grade on Patrick Mahomes.
Wow.
Would anybody be surprised if he threw for 303?
No.
No, it's Patrick Mahomes. But we now have so much data on this that you just can't feel like that's something that's bankable anymore. Let's talk about his receivers. And I want to begin with Travis Kelce. This is a tricky matchup. Denver's allowing the fourth fewest fantasy points to tight ends. No opposing tight end has finished in the top 12 in any game against Denver this year. And that includes Darren Waller, Mark Andrews. They did not crack the top 12. And Travis Kelce has dropped six passes in the past four games. That is the most over the last four games in the NFL.
Dud.
B grade for Travis Kelce. If he played a different position, it'd probably be a C grade. I'm still maintaining an A grade on Tyreek Hill. In the last four meetings, Hill has scored four times, which is pretty good considering Patrick Mahomes has only scored five touchdowns in those four games. Hill commanded a league-high 48 targets over his last four games. Because that volume is there, I'm keeping the A grade on Tyreek Hill. He'll go up against rookie cornerback Patrick Surtain for the first time in Surtain's career. But guarding Hill for the first time is a daunting task. And so I'm going to go advantage Tyreek Hill, and I'm going to keep the A grade on him. Sitting on the bench, Darrell Williams, because once Clyde Edwards comes back, we're going to see Williams go right back to the low usage he had before when Clyde Edwards-Helaire was healthy earlier in the season. It's yet another bye week. You need help at a couple of pivotal positions, maybe even the tight end. We will tell you nine guys upon whom you can take a chance. Many of these players available on the waiver wire and at least one tight end to give you when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. In your starting lineup, many of these guys are available on the waiver wire. We begin at the quarterback position and Scott Fish.
I'm going with Carson Wentz. He's had multiple touchdowns in seven of his last nine. The two he didn't were against the Bills pass D.
Yeah.
And the recently really, really stout Jags pass defense. Mm-hmm. So the Texans are middle of the road against quarterbacks. But Wentz went 223 and two last time, which kicked off a stretch of QBs going for 300 and or multiple scores like four times against the Texans after that. So
okay.
Carson Wentz.
All right. I like it. Matt, your take a chance of me quarterback.
All my take a chance of me players will be on the spelling test this week. We start with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Two P's.
I was surprised when I looked it up. He's only thrown three career touchdown passes against the Seahawks in five games.
Yeah.
Seattle's defense is looking absolutely brutal right now, and Debo Samuel is out, so why Jimmy G here?
Yes, I'm curious about that.
The Niners did figure out something in the first meeting as the combo platter of Jimmy G and Trey Lance managed to throw for 322 and three against Seattle earlier this year. Garoppolo was injured in that game and missed the next 2 weeks. In the six games since returning, Jimmy G has posted two 300-yard games and multiple touchdown passes in three of his last four, and with Debo out, I think it forces the Niners into be more of a traditional offense. Mm. Run the ball with Mitchell, pass the ball with Jimmy. I'm going to go with him this week.
Tyrod Taylor, or Tyrod, depending on who you ask. Taylor takes on the Colts. And while, granted, they haven't had their bye yet, but the Colts have surrendered the most passing touchdowns while allowing opposing quarterbacks to throw multiple touchdowns in eight different games this year. So Taylor may help you through the air here, but also on the ground. We've seen other comparable mobile quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson, Ryan Tannehill, Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence average 7 yards per carry against the Colts. If Taylor's going to get 7 yards per carry and he gets 7, 9, 11 carries, you know, suddenly we're looking at an easy 50-yard game for Taylor on just on the ground. So combine that together, there's your starter.
Fun fact on Tyrod Taylor. Multiple touchdowns in every game he's played this year.
Oh, between ground and air, I think.
Yes,
you're right
between
about
ground
that.
And air.
And sea. Not by sea.
No, he did put the scuba gear on one time.
No sea touchdowns.
Speaking of touchdowns, let's go to your take a chance on me running back, Scott.
I'm going with Sony Michel up against the Jaguars defense. It's not the best of matchups. It's a middle of the road matchup that's gotten better over recent weeks. But Daryl Henderson is dealing with a hip injury, and it sounds like there's a lot of concern he'll play. And if he does play,
there's concern that he will play.
His owners might feel that way lately.
Yes. A lot of concern he won't play, but if he does go, he might be on a little bit of a snap count. And the Jaguars are allowing nearly 30 touches per game to running backs. This is a game where the Rams might get ahead, too, and run the ball with Sony Michel to run out that clock. Mm. I see Sony with 10-plus touches whether Henderson goes or not. So right. I like C-grade there.
Let's go to Matt, and your take a chance of me running back.
The second word in the spelling test is Juszczyk, as in Kyle Juszczyk. This is probably my boldest take a chance of me call of the year. If he scores once, I'm golden in this one. If he scores twice, I get to go into the John Tuvey take a chance on me Hall of Fame.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Two scores from times. Kyle Juszczyk.
He scores four times. Oh, you definitely
gosh.
Can.
Kyle J has caught a pass in every game this year. Debo Samuel will miss this game, as I mentioned. That vacates about 9 targets per game. But in a sneaky way, it's also vacating rushing attempts as he comes out of the backfield a ton. In Samuel's last 3 games, he's ran the ball 19 times. They need to not only replace him as a wide receiver, but a weapon out of the backfield. So why not Kyle? The Seahawks are allowing the most receptions to running backs, the most receiving yards to running backs, and the most total touches per game to the position. They can't give Elijah Mitchell 32 carries again. Kyle Juszczyk is going to get some use in this game.
Check that.
Yep.
Miles Sanders is back, but that doesn't mean Boston Scott's suddenly not going to get carries. They give him plenty of work, even in Sanders' games, and they're going up against the Jets. They rank last in rush defense, last in rushing touchdowns allowed, 26th in yards per carry, and no team is running the ball more than the Eagles since week 7. Granted, a lot of that's Jalen Hurts.
Every time Boston Scott is mentioned on this show, I want Scott to do a Boston accent. Like, from now on.
Can you say chowder?
I will work on it.
Okay.
Have it, yad.
Let's go. Let's go over to the receivers. That could be wide receivers and or tight ends. Scott, who you got?
Chowder. Russell Gage going up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which was an easier matchup earlier in the year, but they're still not great against wide receivers. Over the last 2 weeks, Gage has 15 targets leading the team. Leading the team's wide receivers in targets, catches, and yards. I say wide receivers because Cordarrelle Patterson, I'm calling a running back for this specific statistic. He's had 5 to 6 catches and 50 to 60 plus yards in 4 of his last 5 games, and he's scored in a couple of them. So it's just a good matchup. C grade on him, too.
All right. Matt, you're a receiver. Well, I happen to know it's a tight end.
Well, the final guy in the spelling test is CJ Uzoma. And the Uzi has popped off for a few big days this year. They've all come against porous tight end defenses, and the Chargers fit that bill this week. Last week, the Broncos tight end Eric Saubert scored. The week before, Eric Ebron and Pat Freiermuth each scored for the Steelers. And the week before that, Tyler Conklin scored twice for the Vikings against the Chargers. They're averaging almost 1 tight end score per game and have allowed the second most scores in the league to the position.
Foster Moreau is probably the best backup tight end in the league.
Yeah.
And you may recall in the preseason, we said if there's one tight end, you're going to handcuff.
We've talked about him for a couple of years.
Yeah.
We're Moreau fans.
We are. We're big Foster Moreau fans. That was your handcuff to have. Moreau filled in for Darren Waller once earlier this year, and here's what happened in that game. Moreau was on the field for every single snap. He ran routes on 32 of 37 passing plays. They targeted him 6 times. He caught all 6 passes for 60 yards and a touchdown. And every tight end who's been targeted 5 or more times against Washington has hit at least 50 yards and or scored a touchdown. Foster Moreau. Let's go to another matchup. Chargers taking on the Bengals. Matt, this has been an inconsistent Chargers passing game. What do you think about Justin Herbert as he takes on a surprisingly good Cincinnati pass defense?
I have no idea who Justin Herbert is, but their quarterback, Air Bear.
Thank you.
He's not scared to go up against the Bengals.
No, certainly not.
Air Bear has thrown for multiple scores in 4 of his last 5 and for over 300 in 3 of his last 5. Both Mike White and Baker Mayfield threw for multiple scores against this defense in the last month, but they did hold Derek Carr and Big Ben in check in the last 2 weeks. Should we give him an A grade for air or a B grade for bear? Or maybe we split the difference and give him something in between those.
Too bad.
Like
can't.
An A-B grade.
No.
I'll just give him a B in this
Thank
one.
Thank you.
Mike Williams will face Eli Apple most often in this one. He's the Bengals' worst cover corner, according to Pro Football Focus. It's tough to feel a lot of faith in Williams right now after hitting double-digit PPR points only once in his last six games. After accomplishing that feat in four of his first five this year, last week in Denver, he didn't score but did have eight targets, his highest mark since week five. So I'll take a stand, and I'm going to throw a hopeful B grade on Mike Williams this week.
Yeah, it's that has not panned out more often than not.
It's a hopeful B grade, which is something like between a B and a C.
That is a B grade.
All right. Keenan Allen gets a solid B grade. Slot corner
also
Mike.
Also known as a B grade.
You're always interrupting me, Charge. Jeez. Slot corner Mike Hilton has been very good this year, but Allen has been too. 10 or more targets in five straight games and double-digit PPR points in every game this season, which is crazy. Jared Cook and the rest of the tight ends are on the bench. Somehow they're now targeting four tight ends in this offense. Mm. And while Cook leads the team in looks at four or five targets per game, you need a score, and Parham gets as many red zone targets. It's just gross. Austin Eckler, he does get an A grade, though. The Bengals have been decent against the run game, but they're bottom five in receptions and receiving yards allowed to opposing running backs at an average of seven catches and 55 yards per game. That's right in Eckler's wheelhouse. Over to the other side. Charge, I'm going to need you to get a button ready because Joe Mixon, he gets this week's fantasy aardvark. Joe Mixon, yeah. 31 touches per game since the bye week.
Dang.
And the Chargers have allowed the most rushing yards and the second most touchdowns to the running back position. Yeah. It's going to be a big Joe Mixon week.
For Mixon. I think he's my number one ranked running back this week.
Well, that's how you get an aardvark rating. CJ Uzoma was my take a chance on me receiver. Joe Burrow, I'm only giving a C grade to. He hasn't topped 300 yards in four straight, has thrown two touchdown passes in his last three games. And you don't pass on the Chargers. You run on the Chargers, which is why the Chargers are top five in passing attempts, completions, and yards as a defense, only allowing 218 yards per game. Plus tackle Riley Reiff is not 100% and may not go with an ankle injury. Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins get C grades in this one. Chase hasn't topped 50 yards in 5 weeks. Higgins has scored more fantasy points in three of their last four.
Yep.
Both get a little break, though, as Chargers cornerback Asante Samuel Jr. is looking like he's going to miss this week with a concussion. Still, Michael Davis and Tavon Campbell have been very capable this year. And as I said, people just run on the Chargers, so I think it's pretty low volume here. By the way, Tyler Boyd is on the bench. He draws Chris Harris from the slot. That's the worst matchup, and he's the worst of the three wide receivers.
Yeah, we're not normally starting Tyler Boyd anyway, so that's okay. When we come back, we will dive into more matchups, including Colts versus Texans. Sure, Jonathan Taylor is an obvious start here. We know that Scott Fish likes Carson Wentz. So which of the receivers is going to get be on the receiving end? Of all of those scores, I think you promised four touchdowns.
I did.
For Carson Wentz, a personal guarantee.
Yes.
We'll tell you who they are when we come back. In addition to breaking down the backup running backs between the Vikings and Lions, both of whom are in key roles this week. All of that and more. Fantasy Football Weekly returns in moments. This is the final segment of hour number one of our two-hour journey into fantasy football on Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish and Matt Harrison with you. If you want to follow Scott Fish on Twitter, at ScottFish24. Matt Harrison is at Explosive Output, and I am at Paul Charchi.
Boom.
Colts take on the Texans. Scott, Jonathan Taylor goes without saying. He's an obvious start, and there's no scenario under which you would not start him. But let's talk more about the passing game.
Sure. Carson Wentz obviously was my take a chance on me quarterback. So in the passing game, you'd think I'd like a lot more players than I do.
Yes, I would.
But I have a B grade on Michael Pittman.
Mm-hmm.
He was held down a little bit by the Bucs last week because the touchdown for some reason went to Hilton, T.Y. Hilton, and Ashton Doolin.
Yeah.
A Dynasty Metrics favorite from a couple of years
ago. Okay.
Yeah. He was He's still crushed in target share, though. He's gained over 8 per game. The top receiver usually goes for 75-plus on the Texans and usually scores.
Yeah.
So I got that for Michael Pittman. As for the others, I'm just not trusting it with Hilton. He scored, but he hasn't topped 30 yards in his last 4 games.
Yeah.
All the rest are super inconsistent. It's going to be Pittman. It's going to be Hines getting some catches. It's going to be Taylor getting some catches. Wentz will get there, but we don't know exactly where it's going to go. You mentioned Taylor was the obvious A. His last 3 lines against the Texans, I just want to put these out there.
Yeah.
135-1, 95-1, 158-2.
Jeez.
Those are some things.
He's better now, honestly.
Yeah, he's better now
than he was then.
On the other side of the ball,
Tyrod Taylor was my take a chance at me quarterback. Yeah.
He was. You'd think I'd like a lot of the wide receivers on this.
How about just one of them? Because a lot of the reason I like Taylor was for his rushing.
Yes, exactly. Yes. He gets you 2 to 3 points rushing every week, no matter what.
Oh, he'll get more than that.
Yeah. I do like Cooks. I got a C grade on him. He scored last week to save his fantasy day because his targets had dried up a little bit with Taylor only throwing it 24 and 26 times in the last 2 weeks, which is going to tank them. But Cooks over the season and especially recently and up until that 2-game stretch had been getting 8 to 10 targets.
Yeah,
I figure him to come back a little more in that range with them falling behind the Colts in this one. C grade on Cooks. I have a bench grade on Collins. He got the first 2 targets and catches of the game last week.
And then that was
and the last target of the game. And nothing in between. I can't trust that.
I know.
Into the running game, I have them both on the bench. It becomes a little more interesting if David Johnson doesn't go.
Then Burkhead becomes
absolutely
a plausible plug-in guy.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks, Rex Burkhead went 18 carries for 40 yards and 12 for, I believe, 22 yards or 12 for 28. So if you want 20 carries for maybe 50 or 60 yards, Burkhead might get a C. But
2 yards per carry is what I'm all about.
If Johnson doesn't go, Rex Burkhead doesn't even get my volume C. I'm that low on Burkhead.
Wow.
Vikings take on the Lions. Alexander Mattison will be your starting running back. He was a top 10 fantasy running back in the 2 full games he's already played in place of Dalvin Cook. And he's averaged, in those 2 games, he averaged 32 touches per game.
Yeah, one of them was against the Lions
and
earlier this year.
One was against the Lions, and it was good for 153 yards. Yeah. So an A grade on Alexander Mattison in this one. Let's go over to the passing game where Justin Jefferson is an obvious A, over 100 yards in his last 2 matchups with Detroit, including 124 yards in the earlier meeting. He's become one of fantasy football's safest wide receiver plays. A grade for Jefferson, B grade for Adam Thielen in a far trickier start than Jefferson's. Over his last 4 games against Detroit, Thielen's averaging just 40 yards and only 1 score in those 4 games, including the one earlier this year, which was his 2 catches for 40 yards. That's not good. Fortunately, he does come into this game hot, at least 5 catches and a 71-yard average over his last 3 games. He's also found the end zone in 5 of the last 6, which is great, and touchdowns obviously always help. But oddly enough, the Lions do a good job at keeping receivers out of the end zone, allowing just 1 touchdown to wide receivers in the last month. Detroit. And that brings us to Kirk Cousins. And you can probably see this coming a little bit. A B grade here. The Lions are shockingly competent against the pass. The last 4 quarterbacks to face the Lions are averaging just 212 yards and 0.8 touchdowns.
Yikes.
The Lions. Granted, Cousins is way better than any of the guys that they faced in that last month, but in the Week 5 matchup, Cousins was good for a very modest 275 yards and 1 score. That was it. Still, Jefferson and Thielen, dramatically better than anybody they'll face in the Lions secondary, and they should, on paper, do well here, so I'm keeping a B grade on Kirk Cousins. Let's go over to the Detroit side of this game. Another backup running back, Jamal Williams, will get virtually all of the work here. He got almost every touch on Thanksgiving after DeAndre Swift went down. The Vikings just got hammered by Elijah Mitchell. They're giving up the most yards per carry in the NFL, but they do get both of their starting defensive tackles back, including key run stuffer Michael Pierce, who's missed 2 months of time. He is expected to play in this game. Minnesota's allowed a rushing touchdown in 7 of the past 8 games, and I think Williams does find the end zone here, and a B grade on him. The only part of the passing game that I'm giving a starting grade to is TJ Hockenson, and it's a C that I had as a bench for a long time.
Mm-hmm. If only there was something less than a C.
But there's not a letter between C and bench.
I mean, their harpoon's kind of a
Vikings have been fantastic against tight ends, allowing one touchdown to the position all year. Nobody's topped 44 yards since week 3. And athletic linebacker Anthony Barr likely plays in this game, and he'll get a lot of the Hockenson assignments. Hockenson only managed 2 catches for 22 yards and no touchdown in the first match. You know what? I'm moving to the bench. That's it. And the whole rest of the passing game's on the bench. I don't even have to talk about Goff and Khalif Raymond and Amon Ross St. Brown and Josh Reynolds, including Josh Reynolds. I know he had 3 catches for 70 yards last week. Don't care.
Did you see the Goff record without Sean McVay?
Is it like 2 wins or something? 2 career wins?
0-16-1.
Oh, man. When did he have, what were the other, so he's 0-10-1 now, right? So where were these other 6 losses?
When Jeff Fisher was the coach.
Oh, back in the Jeff Fisher days. Right. Wow, that says plenty. Yeah. And maybe more about Sean McVay than anything else.
Yeah.
Sean McVay got Jared Goff to a Super Bowl.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. Let's go to one more matchup in this segment. Eagles taking on the Jets. Matt, I talked a little bit about Boston Scott, but let's talk about the quarterback position. Jalen Hurts may very well not go in this one. He's got the bad foot, so even if he does play, you might not get the rushing out of him that you desperately need.
Yeah, he was practicing this week.
Game time decision?
Nursing an ankle injury. Probably not a good thing for a running quarterback going against a defense that hasn't allowed anything to running quarterback. It's really easy to run against the Jets as a running back. And the game scripts haven't forced quarterbacks to run much this year. The Jets have only allowed 1 touchdown on the ground to a quarterback this year and an average of 8 rushing yards per game. Add in Hurts' injury, and I think they'll try to keep the owies off Hurts.
Aww.
They're probably going to keep him in the pocket, so I'm going to give him just a C grade. He's going to have to throw. That's not his best trait, but the Jets are allowing 277 passing yards per game. As far as other receivers, I'll give Devonta Smith a C, but the rest are on the bench. Everyone hates Jalen Reagor, by the way.
Yeah, they should after the 2 drop passes at the end of that game.
Really? Smith has only topped 70 yards once in the last 7 weeks, but has scored thrice in the last 4 weeks, so that's why he gets the C. Dallas Goedert was absent last week against the Giants. 1 catch for 0 yards on 3 targets, but I'll give him a C, though, as he was able to top 60 yards in 3 of the prior 5 games, and the Jets are allowing 60 yards per game to tight ends. That's the 7th most. The running backs are just an absolute disaster. Miles Sanders didn't play the second half of last week's game, which led to many believe that he wouldn't play this week because he was injured. But no, he practiced in full on Thursday, so now it looks like he's going to play now, but ankles are tricky. Just ask Scott Fish.
Yep.
Lots of people pivoted to Boston Scott, and Charge talked about him a little bit. He's missed every practice this week with a non-COVID illness. Jordan Howard also missed practice with a knee injury. He looks more doubtful than questionable. And Nick Sirianni won't give Kenny Gainwell more than 3 touches per game.
Oh.
They face the worst run defense in the league. They're bottom 7 in every statistical category against the run, including dead last in touchdowns with 21 total to running backs, almost
That's
2 per game.
That's crazy.
Sanders, I'm going to give a B. If Scott is active, he gets a C. I don't think Howard goes,
no,
but if
Howard,
he does, he
Howard's
gets a
been
C.
Ruled out.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
And if Scott and Howard are both inactive for this game.
Well, Miles Sanders vaults to an A, maybe.
Miles Sanders goes to an A, but then Kenny Gainwell gets a harpoon in this one.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
On the other side, it's the Jets.
It's a delayed harpoon.
Oh, yeah. You can't start a running back on the Jets. We all thought Ty Johnson would get some usage with Michael Carter out, but he was 3rd in the pecking order last week behind Tevin Coleman and Austin Walter.
Oh, jeez.
Austin Walter scored the short touchdown, and Tevin, who is not good, ended up with 18 touches. If you have to start one, it's probably Coleman, who saw the most targets last week, as the Eagles have allowed the 3rd most receptions to running back, but are good everywhere else against the run. And you can't start anyone in the passing game either. Zach Wilson was able to beat the Texans last week on 145 passing yards. He's only topped the 200-yard mark once in his last five games. In seven total games, he's thrown four total touchdown passes.
Ugh.
That takes out all the wide receivers. If you do start one, it's Elijah Moore, who saw eight targets last week from Wilson, but could only manage four for 46. But the deepest dart throw of them all is Jets tight end Ryan Griffin. Griffin leads the Jets in red zone targets with five on the season. Well, Jets tight
nothing.
Ends. The Jets
okay.
tight ends.
All right, thank you.
The Eagles are dead last in the league against the tight end. The most receptions and yards and the second most touchdowns allowed.
Who's playing Ryan Griffin?
That's like a 16-team tight end premium level start right here for Ryan Griffin if you absolutely
Chris Myarick for the Giants tight end scored on the Eagles last week. I mean, if he could do it,
anybody
Ryan Griffin
can
do it.
Antonio Brown's going to miss three games, I have reason to believe. That brings him back week 16. That is the semifinal week for most fantasy leagues. So he'd be there for two of your three, potentially two of your three playoff games, mm-hmm. if you're alive to that point. But do you burn a roster spot on Antonio Brown and hold him all this time waiting for him to come back? What do you guys think?
I am in this situation in a couple leagues. I was, mm-hmm. as we remember from the preseason, I thought he was going to be the best Bucs receiver. And through six weeks,
you
I was right.
You were right then.
So I'm in this situation in quite a few leagues. Those games, I believe, are the Panthers and Jets. I'm going to look real quick.
They are, yes.
I'm pretty sure it's Panthers and Jets. I kind of like that Jets matchup. Panthers matchup, not as great. But
no,
that there's a lot of weapons tricky. For the Panthers, but they're really pretty decent on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
He was wide receiver six. In points per game, fantasy points per game through 6 weeks. If he comes back at full health, he was going to miss a couple games anyway. I think he's worth it on a championship roster at the back of your bench. I'm going to hold him.
I'm inclined to hold him as well because I think he was so good before, and he should be healthy at that point. And Antonio Brown was good.
He was averaging like 85 yards a game.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hold him. The Panthers are actually a very good secondary.
They are a very good secondary.
The Jets, it's going to be a week 17 game. They'll have already locked up the NFC South. There's not going to be much of a reason to get Antonio Brown.
No, they're not going to be coasting in week 17.
But it's also hey, run the ball. It's the Jets. You don't have to.
Tom
Brady always feeds
his
guys.
The Jets are terrible. By the way, the Bucs, their pass rate, even when they're blowing teams out, is ridiculous. They just keep passing. So
if Calvin Ridley's been dropped, are you picking him up? You know, Calvin Ridley, he can come back any day. I mean,
I'm
10 minutes from now, he could decide, I'm ready to be back.
That's true.
I'm also in this situation.
Falcons are not out of the playoff race.
Yeah.
It doesn't look great, but they're not out of it.
It really depends on your team. I have a team where he's on waivers and I have not picked him up. So I guess
apparently your answer is no.
In that league, no. But there are other leagues where I definitely would. So I think it's a little roster dependent. But, I mean, yeah, that's a tough one.
What do you think about trading for him in a dynasty league? We're at the right now. This trading deadline in a lot of weeks right here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What do you think about trading for Calvin Ridley for next year at what might possibly be the lowest point you're able to get him?
This has got to be the lowest point you'll ever get him.
I actually did trade for him last week in one of my dynasty leagues where I'm not really competing this year. I think it's kind of a savvy move. I believe he is back with Atlanta next year, but beyond that, he's not. So I believe this is his last year with the Falcons under contract, so it makes it kind of interesting.
One second dynasty trade I saw this week in one of my leagues. Yeah. Austin Ekeler for Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey.
Dang. Wow. It's come to this for Christian McCaffrey.
A win now for two future assets.
Yeah, that's a win.
That's
now.
A big boy
that's
trade.
That is a win now trade, no doubt about it. One other playoff, as the playoffs are approaching. For those people that, for leagues, average league has got six teams that go to the playoffs, right? Of the six, I believe that that sixth team should get in on points scored.
Yep.
It should not go just by record because so oftentimes a very high-scoring team has just had some bad luck on who they've played.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys with me on this?
Yeah, totally with you.
This is what I've done for 20 years.
We have a team in my home league that's 4-8 right now, but they're the third highest-scoring team in the league, and they deserve to be in.
Yep. They deserve to be in. And the way you know
some
it's
of my
right,
leagues do two spots.
The way you know it's this is the right way to go, if you're that one seed, Who would you rather face, the sixth best record or the highest scoring remaining team?
That's right.
You'd always want to play the sixth best record. That's the worst team.
By the way, you should let your teams with the higher seed
pick their opponent
in the playoffs. Pick your poison. Let's do it.
I don't know about that.
I love it.
When we come back, Fantasy Football Weekly, we will answer three tough questions. Play along. See if you can go 3-0 with our panel of experts when we return. Fantasy Football Weekly. It's hour number two, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Scott Fish, and Matt Harrison. Brought to you by GuillotineLeagues.com. All my player rankings available for free. GuillotineLeagues.com. This is a segment we like to call Three Tough Questions, and we traditionally start right here.
Tough question number one.
Will Taysom Hill finish as a top 10 quarterback, 11 through 15, or 16th or worse from this point forward? Scott.
I'm doing it, man. Top 10. I'm going top 10. The top 10 quarterbacks are averaging like 19 or more fantasy points per game. Taysom Hill just dropped, depending on your scoring, 24 to 28 fantasy points. In a game, he looked terrible most of the game, threw four interceptions, including a pick six, but his rushing got him there. Even if the rushing comes down, the interceptions are probably going to come down as well. Mm-hmm. He's going to have a lot of 20-point games he did last time. And he didn't get a rushing touchdown in this. He had like five rushing touchdowns in his four full starts last year or something.
It was 4-4.
4-4. Yep. Yeah. So I have him in the top 10.
All right. Matt, will Taysom Hill finish as a top 10 quarterback, 11 through 15, or 16th or worse?
So he did run for 100 yards on Thursday night. There's only been two other quarterback 100-yard rushing games this year, Lamar Jackson in week two. Justin Fields in week eight.
Rushing Lamar did it twice, didn't he?
Nope, just once. Oh. Rushing scores are even more important. By the way, Sam Darnold is still quarterback 25 based solely on his five rushing scores.
Yeah.
Tannehill also has five. He's quarterback 13 in total points. So even if Hill is a below average passer, if he can keep up what he does on the ground and score a few along the way, he's going to finish out the season in the 11 to 15 range.
Secretly, this question actually is, will Taysom Hill keep the starting job? Because if he does, he almost can't fall out of the top 10. This is an especially thorny question that way because his passing is bad enough to get him benched. Hill finished as a top 10 quarterback in three of four games last year. He's going to do it this week, making it four out of five.
Yep.
And you'd think he won't have another four interception game, which would help, but it's just so plausible for him to get to a top 10 ranking every week.
The problem is Trevor Siemian was already benched for his passing acumen.
I know, but here's the thing. Siemian's not good, but he's a better passer than Taysom Hill is. Here's what Taysom Hill has to average to get safely in the top 10 every week. Just 200 passing yards, which is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
One passing touchdown. 50 rushing yards. He averages, in the five starts so far, he averages 63. And half a rushing touchdown. He's going to do that.
Easily,
most weeks. The only question you really have to ask is, will he keep the starting job? I think the answer is yes.
I think it is too.
Tough question number two.
Who will finish as the lead back for the Dallas Cowboys? Matt.
Now, does the lead back mean who's going to have more touches this year?
Yes, it does.
The rest of the way?
I don't care who gets the first touch of the game.
Okay.
So just to clarify, I don't care about necessarily the starter.
So like Rashad Penny getting the first carry last week.
Right. Sure. That's right. That does not make him the lead back.
It's still Zeke then. He had 15 touches on Thursday night to Pollard's nine. There's only been one game this year where Pollard has had more. That was Thanksgiving where Zeke bruised his knee. And in that game, Pollard only led 15 to 14. Now, we all see it. Pollard is a better back.
He is a better back.
Mm-hmm. The other thing we all see is Jerry Jones paid Zeke a bazillion dollars, and Mike McCarthy is an idiot who just keeps feeding the ball to Zeke. So Zeke's going to see more touches down the stretch. He's still the lead back no matter how much we beg and plea.
Yeah, Scott.
I have the same thing and virtually the same stuff. It's still going to be Zeke for some reason. Jerry Jones runs this team. He is limping on the field. He is noticeably limping and just lumbering on the field. And
give
they
Zeke
don't
the
care.
Ball.
They just keep – Dem Boy is going to be Dem Boys, and they're just going to keep riding Zeke for some reason.
Yes. I have almost all your talking points as well, but I'll mention this. One of the other things that's going to make it hard for Pollard, who is unquestionably the better back, Zeke's a far better pass blocker.
Yes.
Pro Football Focus ranks Tony Pollard as the league's 112th best pass blocking running back.
I did not see that one coming from Charge.
112th.
Bad stuff about Pollard.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's going to factor into this as well. We want this change to come more than the team seems to want it to come. It ought to. If they want to give themselves the best chance to win, they should make that change. But I don't trust the Cowboys
tough
to do
question
it.
Question number three.
What is the appropriate level of concern for Jalen Hurts? Is it none, some, or a bowel-loosening level of existential dread? Scott.
I mean, he's hurt right now, which that should mean some, I guess. But I'm thinking long-term for the whole rest of the season here. He gets the Jets twice. He gets Washington twice. He gets the Giants in the five fantasy-relevant games he's about to play. Those are all very positive matchups. He was progressing as a passer up until he got hurt. I'm not going to be that concerned about the injury. I really feel like his rushing plus his passing progressing and those matchups, I don't have much concern.
Okay. So none for
none.
You.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Matt, the appropriate level of concern for Jalen Hurts, none, some, or
blowed. He's at least 50 rushing yards in five straight. In fact, during that span, he's averaging 66.4, just under a rushing score per game. You can basically bank on 10 fantasy points per game from just a rushing standpoint, but the passing is still really bad. Under 200 yards in seven of his last eight. Prior to that, in games where he was forced to throw against Dallas and Kansas City, he was able to eclipse the 300-yard mark in both. But after the Jets this week, probably the best thing for him is he gets a bye next week, and he can heal up a little bit. Then he gets football team, Giants, and football team again in your fantasy playoffs. And football team has allowed the fifth most rushing yards per game to opposing quarterbacks. They're also bottom eight in passing yards and passing scores allowed. The Eagles are still in playoff contention in the NFC, too. I don't think they make a change. I have no concern about Jalen Hurts.
As you know, he's been salvaging his box scores with his running, which has been consistently good all season long. Although not as many touchdowns as you probably think. He's only scored rushing touchdowns in four games.
Yeah, but he has eight in those four games.
But sooner or later, your quarterback has to be able to pass the ball. And he hasn't topped the meager threshold of 178 passing yards in 5 weeks. And going back to week five, Hurts is averaging less than one passing touchdown per game.
You know what he needs? He needs a get-right type of schedule with really easy matchups to come
Well, over, here's the funny
that.
Thing. His backup may be getting the get-right opponent this week, Gardner Minshew.
Uh-oh.
What if he starts this game and looks good against the Jets? A very
then it's
real possibility.
Well, it's Minshew. He always looks good.
Right? Then the door opens. And then they're heading into the bye week. They can prep up Minshew to be ready the week after that. There's a scenario here, a not impossible, maybe it's implausible, but not impossible scenario where Gardner Minshew challenges Hurts for the job as early as a few days from now.
Fine, I'll pick up Minshew and my
Eagles are right
leagues.
In the middle of the playoff hunt, and they won't play Hurts just to get him reps if he's not the best quarterback. They have to play the best quarterback. Mm. And your quarterbacks have to be able to pass at some point. And Hurts' passing isn't there yet. The appropriate level of concern for Jalen Hurts is some. Our next matchup is the Bucs taking on the Falcons. Scott, for the Bucs, Leonard Fournette with the big game last week. What do you think about? He's not going to score four times. But what do you think about Leonard Fournette this week in this matchup with the Falcons?
I have him scoring five times.
Five times. Wow. There you go.
No. I have a B grade on Leonard Fournette, mostly because he's a lock for 15-plus touches weekly. I know Ronald Jones is getting in there. But he hasn't had more than 10 touches in any game this year. He's just scored a couple times.
Yeah.
You can't trust that. It's a little fluky. So I have Jones on the bench. But with Fournette, he had 76 yards in the first meeting. a 3-score blowout, meaning he got some work at the he got enough work in a 3-score blowout to get 76 yards. The Bucs keep passing when they are up. That's a problem for him, but he still managed that in that game. The Falcons are allowing the 8th most yards to running backs. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to get enough to lock in a B grade here. In the passing game, Tom Brady, I have an A grade on. As a member of the Bucs, I've tweeted out some of these stats. These are ridiculous with Brady and Godwin against the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
3 games Brady has played the Falcons as a member of the Bucs. 390 yards, 2 touchdowns. 399 yards, 4 touchdowns. 276 yards, 5 touchdowns.
Unreal.
He's just destroying the Falcons. A grade there. Godwin also an A grade. He's played 6 games against the Bucs. He's topped 100 yards, 4 of them, and he's scored 9 times.
9 times?
9 times in those 6 games. Not just 9 times. He scored in every game. He scored twice in 3 of them.
Dang.
All
right, how about Evans?
I have a B grade on Evans. He doesn't get the same volume as Godwin, but he can explode on a dime. And he scores a ton more. Evans Bugaboo, early in his career, doesn't score touchdowns. Mm-hmm. He has 23 touchdowns in 2 years with Tom Brady.
Yeah, not bad.
He's got 10 this year. He's become consistent with it. B grade on Evans. Gronk, I got an A grade on him. 13 catches for nearly 200 yards since he's come back from injury. He was tight end 2 before he got injured.
Yeah, I know.
He's tight end 4 in the last 2 weeks.
They go right back to him.
Right back to him now that he's healthy. On the other side, Matt Ryan's on the bench. He's only finished as a top 10 quarterback twice this year. He's barely startable. He has 1 touchdown and 5 picks over the last 3 games.
Yeah.
It's a good matchup, but he doesn't have Ridley. The offense just seems broken.
A great matchup. The Tampa Bay secondary is getting a lot better. Carlton Davis coming back.
And we talked about this early in the year that they were injured. That's why their secondary was bad early in the year.
And now that they're returning to health, this is turning into a good secondary again.
Russell Gage, he was my take a chance on me player. Kyle Pitts, man, what do you do with Kyle Pitts? Like, if he had 2 more touchdowns, he'd be tight end 3 on the year. That's how ridiculous it is. He's got so many yards.
But he's not, and he's scored in 1 game this year.
Over the last month, guess how many red zone targets he has?
I think they're targeting him a bunch. No, just one.
Red zone target in the last
one
month.
Time.
So he doesn't get you scores. You got to hope for 40 to 80-ish yards, which is what the Bucs are giving up to tight ends. So I got a C grade on him. Yeah, you're starting him, but it feels gross to start him sometimes. Cordarrelle Patterson, running back Cordarrelle Patterson, A grade. Actually, he's just a hybrid.
Really?
Hybrid. My thing with Cordarrelle Patterson is he's completely game script immune. They get behind, they pass it to him. Mm-hmm. They jump ahead, they run it with him. And he gets both no matter what. He gets at least 15 touches in every game he plays, at least 90% of the snaps. In his 9 full games, he scored 9 times.
What?
So he basically scores every game.
9 times.
Didn't he score 3 times against the Bucs in the earlier meeting, too?
No, that was the... He scored 3 times in the overseas game against, the Jags, I believe. Generally, you don't play running backs against the Bucs, so I'm going to play Patterson, the wide receiver, against the Bucs.
I hear what you're saying. I worry about the rushing yards simply not developing, and he runs for like 23 yards.
Okay, and he gets 60 receiving and maybe a score. I mean, then you're up to 80, 90 yards and a score.
All right.
A few receptions.
I want to believe you're right, because I've got Patterson in a couple of leagues. And I've currently got him on the bench in 2 guillotine leagues.
Uh-oh.
So maybe I have to rethink that a little bit. When we come back, Ravens take on the Steelers. We haven't had a good game from Lamar Jackson in a long time. Is this going to be the one? We'll tell you when we return. Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly. We've got a block of matchups for you. Letter grades on all the salient players, beginning with the Ravens taking on the Steelers. Let's begin with the running game. A C grade on Devonta Freeman. As mundane as he has been, his volume and opportunity remain so high that he stays startable here. He's averaging 17 touches per game over the last month for Baltimore. And at 17 touches, pretty much anybody is startable. That volume should be helpful against the Steelers defense, allowing the most rushing yards and touchdowns over the last 5 weeks. Go figure. Devonta Freeman, C grade. Considered giving him a B grade here just because of how much the Steelers defense has slumped, and T.J. Watt not expected to go here. And for all the talk about T.J. Watt, his excellence as a pass rusher, he's also a very good run stopper. They won't have him there. Let's go to the passing game. I want to begin with the receivers and Marquise Brown, who gets an A grade. Steelers pass defense has struggled lately, and cornerback Joe Hayden will miss this game, and that'll help Brown, who scored in both of last year's matchups against the Steelers. Steelers have allowed consecutive 100-yard receiving performances, and if there's going to be a third, Brown is by far the most likely Ravens receiver to continue that trend. Rashad Bateman, though, I'm putting on the bench. We keep saying like this is the week that Rashad Bateman's going to break out, but for once, I don't think this is the week he's going to break out. It hasn't materialized yet. Despite plenty of targets, positive matchups, and this is just a neutral matchup, he's averaging just 48 scoreless yards per game over the last month, so I'm keeping Bateman on the bench at this point. B grade on Mark Andrews, averaging a whopping 9 targets per game since the bye week. He leads the team in red zone targets. The Steelers have allowed almost 60 yards per game to tight ends since week 8, but none of them have scored. And Andrews has never scored against the Steelers, so this might be a yardage game and not a touchdown game for Andrews. Roll all that together, and we've got a B grade on Lamar Jackson. I think he's coming off a bad game. I think he rebounds to a great degree here. Steelers are middle-of-the-road pass defense. They're giving up 250 passing yards and 1.5 passing touchdowns per game. That said, Joe Burrow just ran for a touchdown against them. The week before that, Justin Herbert ran for 90 yards on the Steelers.
Wow.
So back-to-back good rushing weeks by quarterbacks, and here comes Lamar Jackson now at full health. I think he gets plenty done on the ground here. Again, B grade for him. Let's go over to the Steelers side. We'll begin with the running game here, and Najee Harris with just the C grade. The broader Steelers' woes here are affecting Harris a great deal, coming off his worst fantasy game of the year after his team fell behind very early last week, averaging a dismal 3.3 yards per carry over the past 6 games. That's brutal for Najee Harris. Steelers' offensive line is a major hindrance for him. Only one back has cracked 60 rushing yards against Baltimore, and only 3 have topped 100 total yards, so I don't think Harris is going to get near that. Normally, Harris's receiving gives him a safe floor, but the Ravens have been awesome against receiving backs. No back has topped 3 catches or 27 yards since way back in week 6. So there's just nothing to like about Harris's game here other than volume and usage. Let's go to the receivers. Deontay Johnson gets a B grade, and you know the deal on Johnson. Lots of targets, lots of catches, lots of yards, and no touchdowns. That is the likely scenario this week as well. Ravens give up a lot of receiving yards to wideouts and very few touchdowns. Your glimmer of hope for the end zone for Deontay Johnson is this. He will face Marlon Humphrey most often on the outside, and he's given up 4 scores on the season, which is as many as he gave up all of last year. So, glimmer of hope for Johnson, but I don't think he scores here. And it's another heavy volume and yardage game for a B grade.
You know, giving up that many touchdowns, we could call that the Gettysburg. 4 scores.
Ah, I like
it. How about that, huh?
The Gettysburg. Chase Claypool has commanded at least 8 targets in 2 straight games, volume he hadn't seen since in back-to-back weeks since week 2 and 3. And we'll hope it continues here because it led to 80-plus yards in back-to-back games. Weirdly for Claypool, who's built for touchdowns, he has not scored in 5 straight games. And that is, sadly, probably going to continue because he will most often face Anthony Averett, who has given up just 2 touchdowns all season long. Pat Freiermuth has been a great breakout story here, and especially with Eric Ebron on IR. You know, we're bemoaning the lack of scoring for Johnson and Claypool. Well, it's all going to Pat Freiermuth, for Pete's sake. Since his bye week, Freiermuth leads the team in red zone targets and has scored 5 touchdowns. Meanwhile, the Ravens have allowed three scores to tight ends in their last five games. They're also giving up 64 yards per game to the position. That is a lot. So Freiermuth, B grade. So if I roll all of those receivers, if Johnson, Claypool, and Freiermuth all have a B grade, I guess I kind of have to give Ben Roethlisberger a B grade, right?
Nope.
No, I'm giving him a B grade.
Okay.
You know the drill here. Lots of passing, low efficiency, not enough scoring. But Baltimore gives him a lot of upside. Among teams that have had their bye, Baltimore has surrendered the most passing yards to opposing quarterbacks, and I think the yards are going to come here, even if I don't have an explosive game on the docket for Ben Roethlisberger. Some of his ex-teammates have come out, and former players have come out and said they should bench Ben Roethlisberger.
Wow.
But I don't think they know who's on the depth chart, apparently, because there's nobody to turn to here.
Dwayne Haskins, right.
Matt, 49ers taking on the Seahawks. 49ers' Elijah Mitchell coming off of back-to-back 27-carry games. How do you like him this week against the Seahawks?
32 total touches last week against the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
168 yards and a score in that one. He gets an A grade. Boom. He faces the awful Seahawks run D, which I already highlighted a bit in Take a Chance on Me. But I will add that they saw a similar bell cow workload from Antonio Gibson last week, who had 36 touches and 146 yards. I did use Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Juszczyk in the Take a Chance on Me segment. Both of them get a C grade. Debo Samuel, we mentioned, will miss this week with a groin strain. So I'm going to give Brandon Ayuk a B grade here. 85 or more yards in three of his last four. Scored in two of those four. He's back in the good graces of Shanahan, but we're not going to go as far on the wide receivers to reach for Jawan Jennings or Trent Sherfield here.
No.
George Kittle was a big disappointment last week after scoring in the three previous games. I'm going right back to him, though. He gets an A grade this week. The Seahawks have allowed the eighth most receptions to the tight end position, and they allowed a huge day to Zach Ertz 2 weeks ago where he had eight catches and scored twice. Plus, the Niners targeted Kittle 11 times in the first meeting with Seattle this
year.
On the Seahawks side, on our internal Slack, I jokingly asked if Russell Wilson was Take a Chance on Me worthy.
No, it's if he's even on a roster at this stage.
He's 93% rostered still.
That's a mistake.
He hasn't thrown for 300 yards since week two. He doesn't run the ball that much anymore. He's only averaging 14 rushing yards per game. In his last six games, he's hit the two-touchdown mark only twice. And his high water mark for yardage in 20 career games against the 49ers.
Man,
can you
20.
Guess what it is?
Well, apparently it's not that high the way you've set it up. So I'm going to guess like 280
yards. 261
yards. That's the high water mark in 20 games.
Plus, the Niners' defense has been really good the last month or so. No quarterback has topped 250 passing yards since week three. Only three quarterbacks have hit the double touchdown mark in the last eight games, but one of them was Russ. So I'll give him a courtesy C grade here, but he's teetering near the sabotage drop cliff.
Yeah, last week on the show, we said sabotage drop him.
Yeah, well, then you already pushed him over.
Mm-hmm.
DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, they might be there too. They both get C grades in this one. DK has scored four times in his last four meetings with San Francisco. Lockett three times in the same span. And actually, DK and Freddie Swain scored in the earlier meeting this year. Metcalf didn't catch a ball last week until the final minute.
Oh, God.
And Lockett is so reliant on the big splash play, but he only gets like three, four catches a game. The Niners have only allowed two touchdown passes to a wide receiver in the last 5 weeks, and both went to Adam Thielen last week. So if I had to bet on a touchdown for a wide receiver in this one, I'd give it to Lockett, who should face a healthy dose of Emmanuel Mosley, who gave up the scores last week. But it's gross. Gerald Everett, he's on the bench, by the way.
Mm.
And then the Seattle running game is...
What a wreck.
I got one running game that I think is worse in this league.
The Jets?
That I'll put out in the final segment.
Burkhead?
Somehow worse, okay.
Alex Collins and DJ Dallas and maybe Adrian Peterson are all on the bench. Collins is still working through an abdomen injury and was limited in practice this week. DJ Dallas is limited too.
Mm-hmm.
They don't trust him that much either because they made him split the workload with an injured Collins last week, and they signed Peterson to the practice squad because Marshawn Lynch was not available this weekend.
There are media reports saying they're going to elevate Peterson over the weekend and play him in this game.
Now, and then there's the defense. Dalvin and Madison combined for 17 carries and only 60 yards on the ground last week.
Yeah.
The Niners held James Robinson to 29 yards the week before, and Daryl Henderson was held to 31 yards the week before. So there's no way you can start any season.
You know, that was a minute and a half on any of those guys.
You know, what? Don't have Seattle backs on your roster. No, drop Alex Collins.
The thing
Collins,
with Alex Collins
everybody.
Is you give him 10 carries, he'll get you 40 yards. You give him 20 carries, he'll get you 40 yards.
He's like 39. The Leroy Horde of modern day.
Yes. Speaking of James Robinson, he's the only Jaguar worth mentioning as we turn our attention to Jags taking on the Rams. Scott, no other part of the Jaguars offense.
You don't think Laquan Treadwell is going to be a thing?
He led the team in targets and receiving yards last week.
He did.
Former first rounder.
Robinson's got the foot injury, and just when I watch him play, he's just it. You can tell that foot is bothering him. He doesn't have the explosiveness.
He had limited practice all week.
And he's limited all week, and this is not a great matchup. I'm nervous about James Robinson here. What do you think?
I still have a C grade on him because despite being limited all week, this is a guy who plays hurt. And I wonder if it's that undrafted nature in him. He's like, I got to stay on this team. They drafted a first-round running back. I got to prove my worth. The Rams have only allowed three backs over 50 yards this season.
Wow.
And only James Conner and DeAndre Swift logged RB1 weeks because Conner scored twice and DeAndre Swift caught like 8 balls. It's a volume C grade. He's scored in almost every full game he's played. He's played 7 full games. He's scored in 6 of them.
Yeah.
So I like the odds that if they can get down there, they like him at the stripe. He might get a touchdown. He might get you 40 to 50 yards, maybe a little more. He does catch passes. I have a volume C on him. On the other side, Matthew Stafford, B grade. Once an obvious weekly A grade start for the first few weeks of the season, now I have a B grade on him with this offense floundering a bit over the last few weeks. However, his worst game on the year is 243 yards and a score. It's like his floor is a C grade, pretty much. The Jags Basti, as we mentioned earlier in the show, has been sneaky good lately, holding 4 of the last 5 QBs under 200 yards. Those 5 QBs totaled 5 touchdowns, but it's really just his floor is way too safe. He's better than those 5 quarterbacks, and he's got better weapons than all those quarterbacks. I'm still giving him a B grade because even last week, he had 300 and a couple scores.
And didn't even play all that well
in a good matchup. In a really good matchup.
Yep.
A tough matchup, I mean.
Yep. Odell Beckham expected to play in this game.
Cooper Kupp, I'm going to start with Cooper Kupp, though, just an obvious A. Like his last week with OBJ coming on, he had his worst game of the year, 7 catches for 96 yards.
Right.
OBJ expected to play. I'm giving him and Van Jefferson C grades. I like OBJ when healthy a little bit more based on last week. A lot of the early passes Stafford had to OBJ didn't connect. Kept going to him in the second half. Yeah. I love seeing that. Van Jefferson did exactly what he's done all season. A bunch, like 6 to 9 targets. He only catches a few of them, but he usually catches a big one.
Yeah.
He's done that 4 times. Caught a big one that made his fantasy day. Otherwise, he doesn't have a great fantasy day. So I have C grades on both of them. I trust OBJ a little bit more. I have Tyler Higbee on the bench. Just way, way too inconsistent. Especially with OBJ and Jefferson taking so much production last week. Darrell Henderson, C grade. I would have had a B grade if he was healthy, but now I'm giving him and Michelle C grades because I think they split that. If he doesn't go, that's an obvious choice. But as we mentioned in the Take a Chance on Me segment, I got Michelle with 10, 12, 14 touches. Mm-hmm. I think Henderson does that. I think they split it up pretty well, and Henderson catches the ball a lot more.
If Henderson doesn't go, where do you put Sony Michel on a grade?
I had a C grade on him. Okay. He was my Take a Chance on Me player.
Yeah, but is that with or without Henderson? Either way,
Sony Michel is just so much less efficient.
He is. Because he's not very good at football.
Yes.
You haven't even mentioned
Sony
Walkman,
by the way. Yeah. Let's get that straight. I'd hate to have the Sony Walkman nickname not get used and end up being forgotten out of the ether. That's no good. When we come back, some dynasty stashes you'll want to make at the end of this year to set you up for next season, plus our final two matchups, including Washington taking on the Raiders. We'll tell you what to expect from a surging Antonio Gibson when we return Fantasy Football Weekly. Fantasy Football Weekly, Paul Charchi and Scott Fish and Matt Harrison with you. up to this point of the season, we've been using premature speculation in this spot.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we're so late into the season, we usually retire it at some point. We're going to do that now.
This is kind of dynasty premature speculation,
though. Because this is the time, in a lot of leagues, your roster lock is coming up for the playoffs. And so if you're in a dynasty league and you're thinking about stashes for next year, you need to make those moves sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
So we're here to help you with some of the players we think can be savvy dynasty stashes that are available to pick up. That's not easy to do.
I'd say pick up or just go try to acquire.
Trade, okay. That works for me. Scott, do you want to go first?
Yeah, the first guy I'm going to start with.
You got more than one? Awesome. I'll come back to you.
Yeah, I got several.
All right, good.
several points we can go. The first guy I'm going to start with is a guy who I think is going to get paid in this offseason, and that is that number three wide receiver whose contract is up for the Dallas Cowboys, Michael Gallup.
Yeah.
He's looked really good the last two years. It's likely he's going to hit free agency. His contract's up. He's going to hit free agency.
And they're not signing. Yeah. They're not going to re-sign him.
He will be one of the top wide receivers signed out there. He's going to make number one, number two wide receiver money for whatever team he goes to. I don't know where he's going, but he could be really good next year.
All right. Matt, give me a dynasty stash.
You know, the Vikings are going, they're already $10 million over the cap next year.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to cut money here and there. So I think they're going to cut Alexander Mattison, who makes $1.2 million, but only a $200,000 cap
hit. Whoa. You sure it's not Dalvin Cook?
I'm pretty sure it's not Dalvin Cook. So Kane Nwangu is the guy that I'd like to pick up. Dalvin Cook cannot stay healthy for a full year, and the Vikings do love to run the ball. I think Kane Nwangu fills that Alex Mattison role next year, but you seem to think that Dalvin Cook might be on the short list.
You got to make up a bunch of money. You never know. It's possible. That's all I'm saying. By the way, I learned today, Kane Nwangu.
It's Nwangu?
Nwangu.
Okay.
Don't look at the letters because you'll never come up with that.
You just take the N off of it.
The voice of the Vikings told me it's Nwangu. And he would know because he's got to call it correctly.
Yep.
So there you go. Kane Nwangu, Minnesota Vikings running back. Here's my guy, my dynasty stash. Chargers tight end Donald Parham.
I had that on my list.
All right, scratch that. Steven Anderson and Jared Cook are free agents. Parham is the only tight end under contract for the Chargers next year. And get this. Justin Herbert is throwing 31% of his passes to the tight end position.
Mm.
31. And Parham is a freaking beast. He's 6'8", 240 pounds. Dude is an NBA power forward with that size.
Yep.
And if he evolves his game a bit, Donald Parham could be scary good. I like that Parham angle. We'll come back. We have time at the end of the show. I'm going to come back to some more of your dynasty stashes, Scott.
We'll see.
But let's make sure we can get in our two matchups.
I don't think Scott wants to do them anymore.
Maybe not. Once I took Donald Parham off the table.
XFL superstar Donald Parham's off the board. I'm done.
Washington's taking on the Raiders. Let's start with Antonio Gibson. In three games since Washington's week 9 bye, all wins, Gibson's averaged 24 carries for 90 yards, and he has scored twice. Vegas is much easier to run upon than pass upon, so I think he's going to get plenty of work here. Raiders are 29th in touchdowns allowed to running backs, with 13 of them, and they give up over 100 rushing yards per game. And we know that J.D. McKissick's been ruled out of this game, so maybe a couple extra pass catches from Antonio Gibson. Wendell Smallwood will factor into the J.D. McKissick role in this game.
Former Eagles great.
Yes, great.
Great.
Let's go to the passing game here. I've got a bench grade on Taylor Heinicke. As I mentioned, Raiders are hard to pass upon. And just one touchdown pass in five of the past six games for Heinicke. He doesn't provide much upside in any matchup, but especially not this one. Aside from elite passers, Patrick Mahomes, Dak Prescott, and Justin Herbert, Las Vegas is only allowing 210 passing yards and 1.2 passing touchdowns per game. So where does this leave us with his receivers? It's not great, but I do have a B grade on Logan Thomas. In his first game back last week, nearly scored. He was on the field for 80% of the snaps last week, and that number probably vaults to 100%, which, by the way, pre-injury, Logan Thomas didn't miss a snap this year. On the field for every single offensive play.
That was him last year, too.
Mm-hmm. Thomas has a plus matchup this week. Raiders have allowed the fourth most fantasy points per game to tight ends. What's more, over the last six games, they've allowed five tight ends to finish inside the top nine at the position. So B grade on Logan Thomas. And Terry McLaurin's one of the trickiest starts of the week.
Terry McLaurin.
He'll get shadow coverage from Casey Hayward, an elite cornerback, allowing a passer rating of just 53 in his coverage and zero touchdowns allowed. And for McLaurin, who in previous seasons had been pretty much matchup proof, he's been very boom or bust this year, and this feels like a bust game. Only two teams have managed a 100-yard receiver against the Raiders. I don't like McLaurin here. It's a respect for his abilities C grade for Terry McLaurin. Let's go over to the Raiders side of this game. I want to start with a lot of caution on Josh Jacobs. He saw a huge spike in usage last week, but that was an anomaly on the full season where he's been averaging a mundane 11 carries per game before last week. Washington, much tougher opponent to run upon than pass upon, and I don't see Jacobs getting a lot of volume here. Opponents averaging just 13 running back rush attempts per game against Washington over the last 5 weeks. That is the league's lowest figure. So volume working heavily against Jacobs here. They're also giving up the second fewest rushing yards, and they've only allowed one score to backs over the last 5 weeks. So I don't like Jacobs here much at all, and just a C grade. I nearly had him on the bench.
I'd keep him at a C. His passing volume, I think he has like 16 or 17 targets in the last three games.
It's gone up a lot, and that
so
does
that'll
help
give
a little
you the
bit.
C.
That could get you the C. I like the way you put that. Frank Moreau is my take a chance on me tight end this week, and he's got a B grade here. Hunter Renfro, B grade.
Did you call him Frank?
I did call him Frank, I think. I don't know. Who's Frank Moreau?
I don't know.
I don't either. Foster Moreau.
Yeah, Foster. You did that with Brian earlier this week, too.
I think I did on the
job
podcast.
You called Brian Frank?
I did. Renfro has commanded at least nine targets in three of the last four games since Henry Ruggs' arrest. And with Darren Waller out, it's hard to believe he's not going to continue to get heavy, heavy volume here. He's tallied 100 yards and or a score in three games since the Ruggs' arrest. Football team secondary ranks third in yards per game allowed and fourth in touchdowns allowed to opposing receivers. That is not great. Washington is using a new guy in the slot, a guy named Danny Johnson, generically named Danny Johnson.
You sure his name's not Frank?
Sure, Frank Johnson. But we don't have a lot of data on him because he's pretty much new and advantage Renfro on that particular matchup. And so for Derek Carr, coinciding with the loss of Henry Ruggs, Carr has scored just one touchdown in three of the last four games, which is worrisome. But Washington is a bona fide slump buster. They've allowed A, the most passing touchdowns, B, the most passing touchdowns in every game this year, and C, multiple passing touchdowns in eight of the last nine. But I got to only give a B grade to Derek Carr here because of the dearth of receiving talent on this team. I don't think you want to go to any of the depth guys like Brian Edwards or Zay Jones or DeSean Jackson in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Final matchup.
Jackson's interesting.
Charge, could you cue this one up with a few sleigh bells for us, maybe?
Oh, I would be honored to. Like that?
Yeah, just
right,
like that.
I keep that going. It's sleigh bells because we've got a weather game coming on Monday night. If you believe the forecast, we are going to have... What happened? That's the rain. So that's the funny thing is... It's going to be a combination of precipitation right at the freezing line. We could have rain, we could have snow, we could have sleet, or even sneet on Monday night. We could have a Monday night sneet game.
That would be fun.
Oh, boy.
And blustery conditions, 30-mile-an-hour winds expected in this game.
Yeah, so I did look at it right before the show. The precipitation models have eased up a little bit, which I'm a little bummed about because I want to see the gross weather.
Yes.
But the real story is the sustained 20 to 25-mile-an-hour winds with gusts into the mid-30s.
Yes.
That affects a game quite a bit.
More than the precipitation.
And this game features the defense that's allowed the fewest yards, the Bills at 275 yards a game, and the fourth fewest yards, the Patriots at 316, and the top two scoring defenses. The Pats have allowed 15.8 points per game, and the Bills have allowed 16.5 points per game. So this is going to be a low-scoring game here.
Mm-hmm.
Who can you start in this one? Damian Harris, he gets a C grade, and I'll throw a harpoon at Ramondre Stevenson, too. Harris did see a slightly higher snap count and touch total over the last 2 weeks, but it's almost split evenly now, and it's a brutal matchup as the Bills allow only 24 touches per game and a total of 110 total combo yards per game to opposing runners. Those are both top five marks.
Yeah.
Although Harris was able to hit the 100-yard mark against the Bills last year in his only meeting against them.
That was last year.
That was last year. They have not played yet this year.
Noted.
Mac Jones was able to hit 310 passing yards against the terrible Titans pass defense, but he gets Buffalo, the best pass defense in the league, in windy and wet conditions. For that reason, Mac and the entire receiving game, they are all on the bench. The Bills allow the fewest receiving yards to wide receivers, the fifth fewest to tight ends. They've only allowed 8 total passing scores on the year. So Hunter Henry, Jacoby Myers, Kendrick Bourne, and Mac Jones are all on your bench.
Now, you're not worried about the loss of Tre'Davious White. That's a massive loss to this secondary, in my mind, and it could open up somebody to have a big game.
Not in the wet and blustery conditions of this one. And Mac Jones is not a guy who just throws a
ton. He doesn't get a strong arm a ball through the wind, because that's not his game.
You know who does have a strong arm who could throw it through the wind? That's Josh Allen.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to give him a B grade. He's ran for at least 25 yards in 4 of his 5 career meetings with the Patriots and did crack the code against them last December. Ended up with 320 yards and 4 passing scores in that one, but that Pats defense was not as good as this one. They trail only the Bills in passing scores allowed with only 14 on the year, and they've intercepted the most balls in the league. But I'm still giving Allen the B. I'm going to give Stephon Diggs a B grade as well. He should go up against Jalen Mills most of the time. He's their weakest corner and has allowed a passer rating of 112 in his coverage, as well as 5 touchdowns scored against him so far this year. And Diggs was on the receiving end of 3 of those 4 Josh Allen touchdowns last December. He's just downgraded a little bit because of the weather. I'm going to give Cole Beasley a C start. He'll be in the slot against Miles Bryant, who hasn't allowed a score this year. But 76% of the balls in his coverage are caught, and with the windy conditions, you got to think lower distance, high percentage throws are more likely. So that brings Cole Beasley in. That doesn't put Emmanuel Sanders in. He's on the bench. The target load hasn't been there. Dawson Knox will get a C grade for much of the same reason Cole Beasley does. Short and intermediate passes will be key. Plus, Knox scored twice last week and had a third touchdown wiped from the board by a penalty. Finally, the best matchup in this game would be a Bills runner.
Right, if there were one.
A Bills runner going against the Patriots run defense. But there are none. Zach Moss was a healthy scratch last week. You can't start him right now. You shouldn't roster him right now either. Devin Singletary managed 15 carries last week and had 2.9 yards per carry.
Ugh.
The same can be said about Matt Breida, who had 9 carries and ended up with 2.9 yards per carry.
Yeah.
This backfield is probably the worst in the league. It's tougher to forecast the Monday night weather than to start the right Bills running back. The Pats have allowed 4.6 yards per carry on the season. That's the 5th most in the league. They've allowed the 4th most total rushing yards, but they've only given up 4 scores to the running back position all year. That's a Gettysburg. That's best in the league.
Do you think with the weather, there's just going to be a lot more running in this game?
I think Josh Allen just is going to have to keep doing it by himself because those runners are so bad. They can't get anything done on the ground.
Matt Breida's finding his way to the end zone, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, not against the Patriots. Give up no touchdowns to running backs. So they're all on your bench. I don't think any of them should be on your roster either.
All right, let's go back to Dynasty Stashes. You've got a couple more for us in our final moments here.
Oh, does he?
Sure.
Scott does.
First off, maybe Broncos players. They might get Aaron Rodgers this offseason.
Yeah.
What it would do to that offense.
Maybe Judy, Sutton, Noah.
Tim Patrick even just try to.
Hey,
he just resigned for
a bit. How about another sneaky Aaron Rodgers team? The Steelers.
Yeah,
that team
maybe
might be ready to win, too.
I think they're going to be in the Russell Wilson sweepstakes.
Could be.
Along with potentially Philadelphia in the Russell Wilson sweepstakes. But yes, that is another possible landing spot.
Mm-hmm. Here's another one. Maybe Josh Palmer. This actually helps Parham, too. Mike Williams' contract is up. I don't see him re-signing there. They have an out on Keenan Allen, but I don't think they take that. Nico Collins. How about the Bucks? Chris Godwin was franchise tag. He'll be a free agent again. Antonio Brown will be a free agent. Maybe Tyler Johnson or Jalen
Tyler. They hate Tyler Johnson is what I've concluded over the past month.
It's
they
weird.
Don't like him.
But he's playing 65%, 70%.
They never throw the ball to him. If you're on the field all the time and Tom Brady refuses a target.
What if Godwin's gone, though?
But Brown has been gone, and he's been running all these reps, and it doesn't matter.
Well, if it's Brown and Godwin gone.
What do you think of Deshaun Watson, maybe?
Could be.
Yeah. Good. Playing for next year. Thanks for listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. If you are listening over the air, know that we are a podcast. If you're podcasting, know that we are over the air as well. And many stations, it goes both ways. We'll be back next week as the final bye week next week, and the playoffs are looming. Appreciate everybody listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. Best of luck this week. Talk to you 1 week from today. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.